Hello!
Hello!
And welcome to episode somewhere in the late 20s of
Season to Taste!
It is a Doctor Who podcast in which we watch one story from each season-ish of Doctor Who. The season is picked by our trusty randomizer, and at the end of the last episode, the randomizer chose season 13, and we decided to watch the classic story, The Android Invasion. So, Matt, what did you think of Doctor Who and kind of a distillation of almost every story that went before?
Do you know what? Well, when I was watching it, I was thinking, it's clearly not very good for a number of reasons that we'll go into, I'm sure, during the course of the chat, but equally, I was asking myself during episode 3, why is it so utterly hated? Because we picked it because I don't think either of us had ever really sat down and watched it before.
I think I watched it once when it came out on video.
Yeah, and I think that was the same. So we were kind of, well, I felt I was kind of in the shoes maybe of someone watching it for the first time. And actually, watching it as we did, with breaks in between the episodes, I was quite interested to see what happened next.
Yeah. I didn't remember what happened at all.
I quite enjoyed it while it was happening. Looking back on it, it got to the end and I thought, well, that was unsatisfying. But I imagine if in 1976 I'd been watching that week on week, I wouldn't have thought, oh, this is utterly abysmal and dreadful.
No, I don't think it helps that it's sandwiched between Pyramids of Mars and the Brain of Morbius, both of which are considered classics, and you've got this rather run-of-the-mill Terry Nation out of his comfort zone, not writing the Daleks story. But then I thought it was quite indicative of some of the elements of that season. I thought it was quite representative. Mm. The relationship between the Fourth Doctor and Sarah is kind of very laid-back and fun and informal, like in the rest of the season. It's got a lot of the kind of Seeds of Doom action stuff. You know, the Doctor jumping through windows, there are guns.
And the action's done really, really well as well. I mean, I'm sure we'll get onto it, but Barry Letts directed that. We saw The Enemy of the World a few episodes back, which he also directed.
And in a similarly dynamic way.
Yeah, and it is very dynamically directed. Like, the Doctor leaps through windows, and he leaps off roofs, and there's interesting angles, and the whole thing's got pace and energy to it. It's definitely not an episode or a story that you'd watch and think, it's 25 minutes of dullness every week. It's not a boring story. And its faults are elsewhere.
And it is a story where, for the most part, the production lifts it beyond the script. The one exception possibly being the Krull's makeup. But otherwise, the direction and the design and the performances are actually making it more than the script perhaps warrants.
Mm. In the end, I thought, I don't think I would watch that after Pyramids of Mars and think, well, the series is now terrible. It's more like something like Planet of the Ood from the new series. Perfectly well made, you know, some decent moments, but overall just not as good as the stuff around it. And I think probably The Android Invasion is the same. It's perfectly well made, but maybe the script just isn't up to scratch. Mm. And that's why it suffers.
Although not a comparison I'd make, as I think Planet of the Ood is one of the worst Doctor Who stories ever.
Well, or the Doctor's Daughter, or, four, you know,
stop listing the worst Doctor Who stories ever made. But I know what you mean. It's similar in some ways to The Awakening. I know you like The Awakening, but it has that kind of, it's just filling in for a bit between other stories feel. I think it would benefit if it was shorter. I don't think it has four episodes of plot, though it does at least move on to an Earth invasion at the end.
Yeah, well, I think one of the big problems with it is we're kind of getting into some of the things that aren't great about it. I think there are a few things that I think are real problems. One are the monsters. I think the Krulls are incredibly unremarkable monsters, although I was particularly amused in the fourth episode where Stigron bursts into the rocket and goes, "What's all this shouting? We'll have no trouble here," or something like that. And because his nose is a bit pig-like, I was put in mind of Edward from the League of Gentlemen, and that did make me titter.
Guy Crayford then runs in and says, "But Stigron, there is a Deepshim." Yes, Stigron is quite entertaining. The fact that his sidekick or the boss, I'm not quite clear on their power relationship, is played by Zippy from Rainbow, also adds to the amusement. But although they've got good masks in the sense that you can see the eyes, the mouths just don't move at all, and there's such a rubber mask, cheap rubber mask effect.
It really doesn't work, does it? I think the way that they're shot, that the first appearance at the end of episode one, where the little wall panel slides back and there's this horrible blood on Satan's claw style close-up on this roving eye in this grim corpse-like flesh, is really scary. I think it's a really effective cliffhanger. And then when they're kind of shot from the back or bits of face, I think Stigron, the first time you see Stigron's full face, it's reflected in a kind of mirror, and the mirror's distorting.
A warped mirror, yeah.
And it looks really effective. It's just later on when they're fully lit and they're talking and their mouths are just vaguely making some slight movement but not really moving, they become too immobile, and it's like they pulled the kind of half face masks off with the Ogrons and the Draconians, and ultimately they did a really great job with the Sontarans, but with the Vogons and particularly with the Kralls, it's as though they've reached the limit of what's possible on the budget, and actually those masks just don't work.
And then we did discuss when we were watching it that we just don't really understand what the point of the androids are. For something called the Android Invasion, which in itself somewhat undermines the first couple of episodes as you sit watching going, I don't know what they could be, Doctor, maybe androids. In the, as is the way with unfortunate giveaway Doctor Who story titles. But by the end we were going, well, why don't you just invade with Guy Crayford? Do you really need...
And even if
you have a handful of androids posing as the Colonel and one or two other people, why are you really creating a whole village if you're just going to poison everyone anyway?
I think that's the twist, and we had this kind of discussion while we were watching it, in that you can see somewhere in that story, somewhere in that very generic, that doesn't quite work script, there's the seeds of something really good, because the whole idea of this village that's been created on an alien planet and the trees aren't real and it's, you know, the people aren't real, and it's quite effective. And you could kind of see in there a story where the reveal that it's all fake is the big episode 2 linchpin cliffhanger, and then the second part of the story becomes about the invasion of Earth, and you could do it by, you know, it's all a test to see how the humans will react when the planet's invaded, and the Doctor shows the Kralls how it's going to work, so that then in episodes 3 and 4 they actually go and do the invasion, and they'll kind of, it puts them one step ahead of the defenders of the Earth or whatever. But that's not the story that Terry Nation actually tells. What he actually tells is a very generic story that it's like something like Spearhead from Space. It's almost that generic. And Spearhead from Space is only generic in retrospect. It kind of, that and the invasion set up that whole strand of story where the whole thing's about, you know, there's a human traitor or there's duplicates and things like that going on. It feels like it's just been stitched together from half-remembered stories from 1969, 1970, rather than being current to the show.
I mean, it really is. It's stitched together from... it reminds me a bit of Quatermass 2. It reminds me a bit of two Avengers stories, and actually it has Mother from the Avengers in it.
It does.
But The Town of No Return and The Hour That Never Was.
Yeah.
It's got elements of those in. But, I mean, I made some notes. Now, some of these are a bit of a stretch, but I think you can argue that it's got a... Well, they arrive on Earth. They think it's Earth, but it isn't, from the War Games. There are meteorites coming down that are actually alien spacecraft from Spearhead from Space, along with gun fingers... on Autons from Spearhead from Space. We've got a plague that's going to kill people from the Silurians. We've got the ambassadors' outfits turning up at the beginning from the Ambassadors of Death. We've got the eye patch from Inferno. We've got the radio telescope from Terror of the Autons.
We've got evil doubles from Inferno.
Evil doubles from Inferno as well. We've got the Doctor's mind being probed from... and from Terror of the Zygons. The Doctor's mind being probed from Day of the Daleks. A space plague, if you want to go that far, from Planet of the Daleks by Terry Nation, along with the Thal's spacesuit, apparently. We've got a small village from the Demons. Ian Marta playing someone who isn't Harry Sullivan from Carnival of Monsters. Unit from basically all of the early 70s. Stigron's Sea Devil Sheik from the Sea Devils. Sarah actually being a journalist, which is quite a nice element of the plot, from season 11. Sarah climbing a rocket from Genesis of the Daleks. And actually the reveal of the monsters and a bit of the look of the monsters, I think, are quite like the Sontarans from The Time Warrior. So, you know, some of those are slightly absurd, but it did feel like there were lots of elements just lifted from the previous 5 or 6 years.
I think you're right. I think probably people's biggest problem with the Android Invasion is it doesn't do anything better than stuff that's already been done in the series.
Yes, the gun. There's no reason why those androids should have a gun in their finger. It's just, you know, it's a nice look, but it's a look that's kind of done with the wrist guns in the Autons, and it's done better with the Autons.
The kind of deadly doubles thing is done better in Terror of the Zygons. Although, to be fair, it's not Terry Nation's fault that the script editor and producer decided to commission 2 stories in the same season featuring.
No, and I think that's another reason why the story suffers, because it's actually only three stories after Terror of the Zygons, and so we've already seen an evil version of Harry Sullivan being replaced. And actually, that, you know, it should be, and it is, a really nice moment in the story. When Harry nonchalantly walks past, you know, we've already met Benton, so it isn't impossible, but there's far more of an impact, even though we've known Benton for longer. Harry is a recent companion who we don't even expect to see.
Well, I said it to you, it's just like Martha in season 4. If they'd landed in the Sontaran strategy and Martha had suddenly just walked past rather than being the crux of the plot. I think my disappointment with Benton and Harry is that it's clear from the outset that they're androids, and how much more fun would it have been if you actually thought for at least an episode, or, you know, at least for a few minutes anyway, that these were actually the real characters.
And it's the same with Android Sarah. That's a brilliant cliffhanger in episode 2 when her face falls off, and it's the bit that we will have remembered even before we watched it, because it's shown so often. But you've pretty much been told
You know she's still imprisoned on the spaceship.
Yeah, and it just needs a bit. And Stigron's talking about testing the doctor. You just kind of want that to be toned down, so you have at least a moment of possibly thinking it is her. And the doctor recognises that it isn't her, because she's wearing the scarf that he took from her. But she wasn't wearing the scarf by the time they made the duplicate. So you wonder why they added a scarf on.
It's as though the doctor actually realises when she drinks the ginger pop that she said in episode 1
and
she
doesn't couldn't
stand. But then maybe when they were making it, they thought, well, that was over a week, well, that was a week ago, so people probably won't remember that she hates ginger pop, and that's, you know, a trigger. So maybe better change it to something that's more visually obvious. Mm.
There's quite a nice,
my theory anyway.
There's quite a nice bit of cunning reminding the audience when she tries to call after the doctor that the TARDIS has gone missing in episode 2, and she carries on saying it even though he's not there, and it feels like a slightly hackneyed character just talking to themselves, finishing a sentence they don't get to finish. But actually what it's doing is reminding the audience that the TARDIS isn't there, because it was a kind of a small moment a week ago.
I mean, there's lots of bits that are good, but it's as though every bit that's good is undermined because it doesn't happen for good reason. So, for example, when Stigron shoots the android to prove that he's got an android destroying gun, the effect is really good and nasty, and you know, it shows the ruthlessness of the character, and you know that he's smart and a dangerous opponent.
Mm.
But then he's just gone to all the trouble of mind wiping or mind stealing Guy Crafer to create an android just so that he can shoot it. Why didn't he just
knock one up?
Well, why didn't you just ask one to come in and the many that are wandering around and shoot that? There's loads of stuff that, yes, that minute works, but the 2 minutes leading up to it are nonsense. And you know, the android creation is a really nice reference to Metropolis, with the kind of android frame being replaced by a living person. But
it's there to some extent with just pointless. With Sarah as well. You know, Sarah turning out to be an android is a really shocking thing, and particularly in a series where, you know, even then the companion is your viewpoint character alongside the doctor, and to suddenly discover that the person you think is the character you're following isn't actually who you thought they were is a big moment, and it is really effective, even though it's undermined a bit. But the whole idea of this kind of, we're going to test the doctor a bit to see what he's like, we're not going to kill him, it's just contrived, you know. The audience are going, why don't you just shoot the doctor? And so the characters start contriving reasons why they're not just killing the people who could ruin their plan.
Yeah.
And so although it's a really nice dramatic moment, it's really quite a contrived dramatic moment.
You see, having this conversation is making me think of all the reasons why I think it is a bit crap. I was kind of vaguely aware of all this when I was watching it, but I still quite enjoyed it when I was watching it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's only now that we're picking it to pieces that you see how flimsy and rubbish it really is.
But
I think that's the problem with a lot of Doctor Who criticism, is we pick over something that was intended to entertain people for 25 minutes once a week, and it's perfectly acceptable at what it was made for, but it's just not any better than that.
But I do think it kind of gives and takes away over and over again. So Sarah is on really good form. It's actually really nice that an investigation that she did in the past as part of her journalism is relevant.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's info dumping. It feels like it's giving the whole thing a bit more depth. But how many times does she fall over in this episode?
Well, I was
twisting her bloody ankle.
I thought that this is the Sarah Jane who later appears in The Five Doctors, because not only does she roll down a slight incline after twisting her ankle, but she's also wearing like a pink and white costume and basically knocks things over and is particularly ineffectual in this one. I don't think it's Sarah Jane's finest hour by any means.
You know, Milton Johns, I think, is pretty good as Guy Crayford. It's interesting that he was in The Enemy of the World, that Barry Letts directed, and I wonder whether he's someone that Barry Letts just liked. Yeah. But even he, you know, he's really good in the first episode is by far the strongest, and he is good in the first episode, but you kind of get the feeling he's already gone up to 11 with 3 episodes still to go, and he's not left himself anywhere for that character to...
Well, there is the character's a nothing character anyway. He's utterly stupid because he believes that Stigron's going to keep to his word. Even though
no one's
going to
die.
Every step of the way, Stigron's horrible to him and mistreats him and all the rest of it.
But also, Guy Crayford even says to Stigron, "Yes, I've ordered that the Doctor and the girl be shot on sight." And then in episode 4 he's going, "But Stigron promised me that no one would die."
It's ridiculous. And then one of the most absurdly stupid moments in the story and in the whole of Doctor Who is the ridiculous, "Oh, but my eye's actually fine under the eye patch.
And I never checked."
It's like, it's utterly, utterly absurd. It is mind-numbingly stupid.
What a stupid plan by Stigron. What, he's won his confidence by telling him that he's put him back together apart from... Why not tell him that I even managed to get all your eyes working again?
Although... gets onto the theme of the eyes, because I think there's a very Jeffrey Sachs style focus on eyes. Every cliffhanger ends with like a close up on an eye or a pair of eyes. So first cliffhanger, Stigron's eye, the second is the robot Sarah Jane's eyes, the third is Sarah Jane's real eyes as she's pressed backwards by the gravity. There's Crayford's eye, so you know, all these eye things. I'm probably making a theme that's not there, but it did...
It's 3 eyes in 1 sentence.
It did quite entertain me spotting, you know, every cliffhanger has that kind of motif.
And I think, I don't know whether it's Barry Letts deliberately saying, well, I'm going to use the same style of shot for each one, or whether it's just a much more straightforward thing of, actually, what you want in a cliffhanger is someone's face. Albeit that actually... it's only really Sarah where it's a reaction to something. The others are antagonistic, but there's a much more powerful shot when you've got a close-up of her face.
I actually thought maybe it was Barry Letts being clever and thinking, well, the eye is a big,
is the revelation at the end.
Revelation, so I'm going to keep that in the audience's mind.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to eyes, Stigron's eye and other eyes.
Well, one of the other things I like with some of his shots is that he's got reaction shots of the androids, particularly in the first couple of episodes, where, you know, the Doctor has had some chat with them and wandered off, and then he's got a straightforward dramatic reaction shot, except the actor is completely stock still because they're an android, and it's using that language of television where you just go to a reaction shot and then telling you something about that character by the fact that they aren't reacting at all, which I thought was quite clever. I mean, I think in the first couple of episodes, there is a really good creepy mystery in the village, and the idea of the Doctor and Sarah turning up somewhere and it apparently being an English village and but the people just behaving really strangely. I mean, that is the stuff of 70s gothic horror, isn't it? You know, wandering around in The Wicker Man and having people behaving oddly is the whole tense undercurrent of that film.
Yeah.
And so that works really well. And you've got the soldier at the beginning jerking around as an android, you know, throwing himself really realistically off a cliff just after Sarah's trip down a small incline. That works really well and gives you a really shocking opening accompanied with some like really dramatic music that felt quite 1960s Doctor Who to me. The opening, I just think, works really well. The trouble is it descends into capture, escape, run around for a bit, capture, escape, all with a bonkers plot behind it.
Yeah.
And a bit of a run-around conclusion. Although even at the end, I think the stuff with the Doctor's duplicate is fun, and Tom clearly has fun playing both of those, and there's a nice big Doctor versus Doctor Terry Walsh fight scene in the scanner room. It's not an abysmal story by any means, and I think if you only ever saw the first couple of episodes, you'd think it probably went on to be quite a good tale.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the setup works better than the conclusion. The third episode is a bit dismal because it's nothing really happens. It's just lots of stalling before they actually do the invasion. I think the last episode is a bit disappointing. It would have been nice to see Harry, Sarah, the Doctor, Benton together again at the end and have a little kind of tag scene.
It's almost a shame that Harry and Benton turn up as themselves, because it's so cool having them in as android duplicates. I mean, they therefore have to be there, but it kind of lessens the impact of having them in for that reason.
The other thing that I was thinking was quite interesting watching it is that for all that the Hinchcliffe era seems a bit of a break from the previous Barry Letts stuff, you've got Barry Letts and Terry Nation, who wrote and directed and produced obviously loads of stuff in the earlier 70s. It's the second of three unit stories out of six, that series, which is more than there have been since season 8, really.
And even in Pyramids of Mars, they're in the Unit HQ.
And they're going to Unit HQ, and it's all about trying to get back to Unit HQ. Yeah, you're right. So you know, for all this big break, I think, for me, Series 13, it's got a different tone, and clearly a more horror-oriented tone, but it's very much the format that Barry Letts and Terrence Dicks created for Season 9, where, you know, there's a couple of unit stories in Series 9 and the rest is all in outer space or what have you. Series 10, the same. They only got unit at the start and finish. And
I do think also it has, more than any other, that kind of Avengers feel to it. In the contemporary Earth stories, it's natural that in the kind of more sci-fi ones and the ones on other planets, the Brain of Morbius is not going to be Avengers influence, but I mean, the Seeds of Doom is strongly Avengers influence. But the Android Invasion, it's almost using the Avengers style to reinforce the idea that it genuinely is Earth.
And I think you're right. I think probably why that is because in the Avengers, it's usually Steed and female companion turning up and investigating. And obviously, when you've got the whole unit paraphernalia, as you do with the Pertwee stuff, that's much harder to pull off than when it's just really the Doctor and Sarah Jane turning up in unit, just maybe a background thing.
And almost the other way around, it becomes slightly more inevitable that you fall into that style. If you have the Doctor and his younger female companion turning up somewhere, particularly where there is no real other cast that they're allied with, as they are in this story, it actually almost by default falls into a Steed and Mrs. Peel type, or Steed and Tara King type relationship, because there isn't anyone else part of the story.
For me, I totally recognise the change of tone in the Hinchcliffe stuff compared to the Barry Letts stuff, but I still think there's probably more continuity between the two than there are differences. And I was watching Android Invasion and thinking, well, Terry Nation, you could rely that Terry Nation wouldn't write the fourth Doctor any differently than he would the third Doctor. So I imagine he would have turned exactly that script in had it been John Pertwee or Tom Baker in the lead role. And I was kind of entertaining myself imagining how it would have been if it had been John Pertwee and Liz Sladen doing the story.
Because for all that you look at the bit where he like bashes the gun out of her hand and go, oh yes, this is violent Tom from season 13, Pertwee would have just done a kind of high karate move and done exactly the same thing, and you'd have gone, oh yeah, man of action.
Yeah.
I think that's very fair. And the one other thing I wanted to mention, because I think it's something that's said about the Android Invasion, is that it's kind of falls into that cliche of Doctor Who and the English village.
Yeah.
That you know, why is it that the aliens always decide to invade a small English village that they don't do in modern Who? Largely, they kind of go for we'll go for London and just accept that people see aliens. But when I try to think of actually how often that happens, particularly up to this point, I've already mentioned the demons being the kind of village setup. But actually, I can't think between the demons and the Android Invasion, there isn't another one that leaps out at me. There aren't many before. The Awakening leaps out later. I suppose there's Black Orchid possibly, but that's not really a village thing. That is a big house.
Yeah.
And there are some where there are remote places and maybe one or two buildings. And there are some where there are bigger towns. But there's not many I can think of where that kind of village community and the local pub and the we don't like strangers around these parts style.
No.
Isn't, for all that it's supposed to be a trope of Doctor Who, I'm not convinced it is. Rural places being invaded a bit, yeah, but not so much that kind of village setting, even though it's made out to be a cliche.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Moffat, in a sense, kind of touches on it with the whole Ledworth thing in Series 5, where you've got the Amy's Choice episode where it's the elderly people there, but it never really goes for it in that full-on creepy villages type approach.
Well, so Ledworth's kind of more of a town, isn't
it? It is, because there's a big hospital outside.
It's just trying to do somewhere that isn't London or Cardiff.
And the sticks, really.
And you know, Amy's Choice is only set there because it's kind of in their heads, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's where Amy's from. The only real point of an invasion where that is a chosen setting is the 11th Hour, and even then it's to do with Amy's crack.
Huh.
But yeah, I can think of the demons and this and the Android Invasion and the Awakening, and even something like Battlefield. I mean, Battlefield kind of is a village in the sense that you have the churchyard and the pub, but it never feels like a village.
Fenric's more villagey than Battlefield, I think.
Yeah, although Fenric's on a...
It's a military base.
It's more of the, even though it's got a village there, it's much more about the military base. Yeah, and again, you see the church is quite a good symbol. I mean, you see the church in the background in the Android Invasion, and it's obviously a core part of the demons. That's kind of your defining thing, that this is a village, is it's got a little church that the community is centred around. And yeah, Fenric has it a bit. But yeah, I just can't... It doesn't seem to be, to me, as big a trope as it's claimed.
No, it's not. I think it's just that there's one very memorable story that features... That significantly features a village.
And actually, that isn't a big alien invasion story. That's about...
It's about
a master
buried.
And a buried...
And the demons is much more...
Quite much from the pit.
Hinchcliffe-y. Than you might expect from a kind of John Pertwee story, because it's about something horrible from the past which has been buried and is coming back to haunt the present. And a lot of the Hinchcliffe stories follow the format of there's some evil from the past. It's not from outer space, it's actually buried
in the
earth. So, well, Image of the Fendal, not so much. I was thinking more like Pyramids of Mars. The Seeds of Doom is something that's been buried and is dug up. Almost M.R. James.
Hand of Fear.
I hesitate to say. But yeah, the Hand of Fear, again, stuff buried from the past that comes back to menace the present.
Ian Levine.
And that's exactly what happens in The Demons, and, to be fair, the Silurians and the Sea Devils.
John Levine. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is actually it. You know, we can identify more stories in those few years where that is the trope than we can just small villages where aliens are invading. Well, I did enjoy watching The Android Invasion. I may have zoned out a little bit as it turned into a runaround in episode 3, but I thought, particularly early on, it was quite a good textbook example of how to do a creepy village story. It's just a shame that it kind of falls apart. And actually, and episode 4 has a lot going for it as well. It's just is so undermined by the stupid, stupid eye patch thing. And Colonel Faraday should clearly be the Brigadier and isn't, and that doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, it's really well directed. Like a lot of Hinchcliffe stuff, it takes lots of direction from horror movies of past decades. So, like, there's a bit of Invasion of the Body Snatchers in there, and there's also a little bit of Village of the Damned.
I was thinking of Village of the Damned.
And there's also maybe even a little bit of Quatermass too, with the kind of, you know, duplicate
definitely
stuff. But no, I thought it wasn't the best thing ever, but it was fine.
Nigel Neal before Sutek. Sorry. Right, well, that is the end of the Invasion, which, yeah, we kind of picked thinking it was going to be rubbish and enjoyed it more than we expected. So let's fire up the randomizer, as is our wont, and see which season to taste next.
Let's do it.
Well, the readout on the randomizer tells me that there are 10 seasons left from which to choose.
Okay.
Including, as I think we're well aware, all 3 Peter Davison seasons, the one Doctor who hasn't cropped up at all yet. In fact, for the benefit of the listener, I shall just tell you which seasons we have yet to do. Season 1, the first Hartnell season. Season 8, the second Pertwee. We've got some more Tom with season 14 and season 17. All 3 Peter Davison seasons. David Tennant's last full season. And a couple of Matt Smith seasons. Series 5 and Series 7. Let's ask the randomizer which season to taste. Now, before I fired up the randomizer, Matt did say to me he was predicting season 20, which would finally be a Peter Davison season. But as it happens, it's picked season 20.
Really?
Yes, it has, yeah. Season
20. I should be predicting the lottery numbers. If only I had a useful psychic talent, rather than one that's going to be about which Doctor Who story we're going to watch next.
You could be like Professor Clegg in Planet of the Spiders. Well then, there are a number of stories from which to choose in Season 20. We have Ark of Infinity, Snake Dance, the Black Guardian Trilogy, Mordred Undead, Terminus and Enlightenment, The King's Demons, and for the purposes of Season to Taste, we also count the 5 Doctors as part of Season 20. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stories to choose from. And all of them I think we know reasonably well.
Have you got any strong preferences from the off?
I like Season 20 quite a lot. I think I probably know The King's Demons least, but it's also a bit naff and I'm not really interested in doing The King's Demons. I think it's particularly representative of the season. I'm always tempted by the 5 Doctors because it's just a huge amount of fun, and obviously we get extra Troughton and the only appearance by Richard Herndl as the Doctor.
The John Hurt of the 1980s.
Not so much the War Doctor, more the kind of Tea Doctor, but
the Pineapple Doctor.
So the 5 Doctors is always tempting. I quite like Arkham Infinity and I haven't seen it for a while. You're making the kind of face that says you don't like Arkham Infinity, which I can understand. It's one of those I think I probably liked more from the novelisation and then carried it over to the show. Snake Dance, I don't know very well. I love Kinder, and I've always felt, I know a lot of people like Snake Dance more, but I've always felt Snake Dance is like the lesser sequel. So I would be quite interested to see Snake Dance. And the 3 Black Guardian ones I know very well. Mordred Undead I like a lot. Terminus has its problems, but is entertaining. And Enlightenment, ever since we realised that Enlightenment is basically a pantomime, and Captain Rack, this thigh-slapping pantomime villain, suddenly it became a lot more entertaining, and I enjoy it a lot more. I think Mordred Undead is my favourite of the 3, but I could happily watch anything from Season 20.
The King's Demons is the first Doctor Who story that I have really strong, like vividly strong memories from, because I can remember.
I thought you were going to say really strong antipathy towards.
And I've got a really vividly strong memory of the King's Demons. I can see now. I can picture it in my mind's eye. I'm even doing Mary Whitehouse's withered claw. I can picture in my mind's eye now the Doctor, Chameleon, and the Master doing their kind of duel. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the sofa was pulled out from the wall because at my parents' house, the sofa normally sits against the wall, but it was pulled out because I think my parents were decorating. So I was sitting on the sofa, pulled really close to the TV, and the announcer over the end credits of the King's Demons episode 2 said, and that's the last in the series of Doctor Who, and now a question of sport or something like that. And I can remember I was very upset because I thought that meant Doctor Who finished forever and had been replaced with a question of sport, and which even at 4 I was not impressed by.
And that its last episode would be The King's Demons Part 2.
The Five Doctors was the first Doctor Who story I ever had on videotape. We had Betamax off-air of its broadcast as part of the Children in Need,
mm-hmm.
and it had a couple of men in grey suits doing an introduction to it. Probably from the Midlands breakout. Ark of Infinity has got lots and lots and lots of problems with it. And I tend to think it's probably the worst Peter Davison story. I think it's probably the worst by quite some margin.
Really?
It's definitely much worse than Time Flight, which I quite enjoy. It's possibly a contender with Warriors of the Deep for not being very good, but I can't.
Warriors of the Deep, Resurrection of the Daleks.
Fall
to Doomsday.
I think it's worse than any of those. Snake Dance, I think, is really, really good. Mordrin Undead, I really enjoy. Terminus, I don't enjoy that much. I think it's a very. I just associate it as being everything's very grey. Like the spaceship's grey and everyone's wearing grey robes and the garm's grey. And I just think it's visually a very boring story. I love Enlightenment. I think it's one of the best. It's got Mark Strickson really going for it. It's got those really spooky scenes at the start where the TARDIS is powered down and the White Guardian's appearing like a ghost. And
mm-hmm.
It's quite creepy, and then it turns into a big over the top fun. But it reminds me it's like a Hartnell story. It's got that kind of bizarre poetic quality that some of the Hartnell stories have, where it's just huge, bizarre ideas that you just tend not to get in a lot of Doctor Who. So that hasn't really helped narrow it down, has it?
We'll discount Ark of Infinity, and we'll discount Terminus. I will discount The King's Demons. Okay. So that leaves us with Snake Dance, Mordrin, Enlightenment, and The Five Doctors.
And I love The Five. I went through a period in my late teens of being a bit sniffy about The Five Doctors, and I was a twat, because it's huge fun.
We all had our difficult teenage years, didn't we? I mean, some of us took drugs, some of us got drunken in the park on White Lightning, and some of us got a bit sniffy about The Five Doctors.
I don't know, I love The Five Doctors, but I kind of feel like we've waited so long to do a Peter Davison story, it's a bit mean that when we finally get to do one, we're actually doing all of the other Doctors as well.
Mm.
But I wouldn't rule it out, because I always enjoy watching The Five Doctors, and it could actually be quite fun.
We can, of course, with Snake Dance, we've been watching Elementary, and we could play Try and Spot Uncredited Child Johnny Lee Miller in Snake Dance.
Oh, I'm struggling now because I like all four of those stories. Probably Mordrin a bit less than the other three.
I really like Mordrin. I think it's got a good mystery to it, and it has actually got the Brigadier in. Even if instead of Colonel Faraday being in it when it should have been the Brigadier, it's the Brigadier instead of Ian Chesterton. It is nice what they do with the Brigadier and the way he gets to be in two different times.
Wibbly wobbly timey-wimey.
I think I'd rather not watch Enlightenment.
Okay.
Because I have seen it quite a lot. I don't like it as much. Do you want to knock one out?
Well, I
let me rephrase that. Would you like to remove one of Sankadon's Mordrin and the Five Doctors.
Well, I was actually just thinking another reason why the Five Doctors is appealing is it's not so long since we watched the Day of the Doctor, the 50th anniversary special, and it might be kind of fun to go back having seen that and think about what they did for the 20th anniversary.
And we watched the Three Doctors for season 10.
It's not really part of season 20 in any sense other than we've just lumped it in there. It was a co-production with Australia, completely separately from the rest of the season.
But it was treated as an anniversary season, and
This is true. But it was made like the Day of the Doctor as a separate thing on its own. And actually, in terms of broadcast, it's actually much closer to Warriors of the Deep than it is to King's Demons. I think it's about 6 weeks before Warriors of the Deep, whereas it's 6 months after.
Nevertheless, this is the system for which we've opted.
Well, as we all know, Terror of the Zygons was made as part of season 12, but we included it in season 13.
Exactly. This is not getting us closer. So,
if I had to eliminate one, I'd probably eliminate Mordrin.
I thought you'd say that. So we are between Snake Dance and the Five Doctors. Five Doctors also has the Brigadier, of course. We don't have to give Brigadier lists by not picking Mordrin. But Snake Dance is not a multi-dot story and is a straightforward, curious in its own way. I know the Five Doctors backwards, and it's one of those stories that where the fact that I know it backwards doesn't make me any less inclined to watch it. But, and we have just, we can compare Sarah's outfits properly and her, and her falling down hills, but I think probably we should watch Snake Dance. Okay, you're sticking your lower lip out.
I'm pouting a bit.
To say, I really want to watch the Five Doctors.
I do kind of want to watch it, but you're probably right.
Well, if we watch the Five Doctors, we get Ainley from The King's Demons, we get Courtney from Mordrin Undead, we get the Time Lords and the Castellan from Arkham Infinity.
Do you know what? They wanted to get Colin Baker back for the Five Doctors, and he wasn't available. And how fortunate we all are, because had he been available, apparently they would never have cast him as the Sixth Doctor.
It is a stroke of luck. Fortuitous would be a more apposite epithet.
Anyway.
Are you just now looking at the covers of Snake Dance versus Martin Clunes with an earring versus Richard Hendel with an eyebrow? Look at Tom Baker's face there on the Five Doctors cover. Definitely in that story.
And look, it's not even from Sharda, that's the worst. It's just like,
and look at the white-haired old man in the corner of the Snake Dance thing. Is it Richard Hendel in another wig?
In a nappy. He looks more like William Hartnell than Richard Hendel.
Okay, are we going to play Spot Johnny Lee Miller, or are we going to play quote every line of dialogue from The Five Doctors?
Oh, sod it.
The Five Doctors it is, ladies and gentlemen. Inevitable. In the end, the decision was as easy as pie.
Is this pie?
Mmm.
I could destroy pie.
Right then, so for the next episode of Season to Taste, which I think is episode 27, we will watch The Five Doctors, and I can tell already that you are massively jealous and you may want to go away and watch it at home.
Will we watch the 1983 original or the 1995 special edition?
Let me think.
By the liar Paul Vanessis.
let me just toss this double-headed coin, and heads for 1983. Yeah, the special edition in the sense of Mummy says I'm special. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Season to Taste, and you'll tune back in to find out what we thought about
The Five Doctors.
Bye!
Bye. He's done a lot of good work on audio.
So not putting any of this in.